यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरा बनाचारी पद परमहंस परिव्रजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर सत श्री श्रीमद एसी भक्तिवीरंत स्वामी शील प्रभुपाद की जाय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जाय। नामाचार्य शील हरिदास ठाकुर की जाय। प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवास अधिगौर भक्त वृंद की जाय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गोवर्धन की जाय। श्री वृंदावन धाम की जाय। श्री मथुर धाम की जाय। श्री द्वारका धाम की जाय। नवदी धाम की जाय। जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जाय। सामवेद भक्त वृंद की जाय। ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग। ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्रील प्रभुपाद। ओम ज्ञानतिमरंदस्य ज्ञानंजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मायां ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगना रघुनाथं विथं थं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदां सहगना ललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका खंता राधा खंता नमोस्तुते तप्त खंशन गौरांगे राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरे प्रिये वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधोभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। I was told to do text 47 today. All right. Shreyan Svadharmo Vigunaha Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurvan Napnoti Kilvisham Shreyan Svadharma Viguna Paradharma Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurva Napnoti Kilvisham Shayan Svadharma Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurvanapnoti Kilbisham Shayan Svadharma Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurvanapnoti Kilbisham. Shayan Svadharma Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurvanapnoti Kilbisham. Shayam Svadharma Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurvanapnoti Kilbisham. Shayam Svadharma Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurvanapnoti Kilbisham. Shayam Svadharma Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurvanapnoti Kilbisham. Shayan Svadharma Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyata Karma Kurvanapnoti Kilbisham. Shayan Svadharma Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Svabhavaniyatam Karma Kurvanapnoti Kilbisham. Shayan Better Svadharma One's own occupation Vigunaha, imperfectly performed. Paradharma, then another's occupation. Suanustitat, perfectly done. Svabhavaniyatam, prescribed according to one's nature. Karma, work. Kurvan, performing. Na, never. Apnoti, achieves. Kilbisham, sinful reactions. Translation. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. Purport. One's occupational duty is prescribed in Bhagavad Gita. As already discussed in previous verses, the duties of a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra are prescribed according to their particular modes of nature. One should not imitate another's duty. A man who is by nature attracted to the kind of work done by Shudras should not artificially claim to be a Brahmin, although he may have been born into a Brahmin family. In this way, one should work according to his own nature. No work is abominable if performed in the service of the Supreme Lord. The occupational duty of a Brahmin is certainly in the mode of goodness, but if a person is not by nature in the mode of goodness, he should not imitate the occupational duty of a Brahmin. For a Kshatriya or administrator, there are so many abominable things. A Kshatriya has to be violent to kill his enemies, and sometimes a Kshatriya has to tell lies for the sake of diplomacy. Such violence and duplicity accompany political affairs. But a Kshatriya is not supposed to give up his occupational duty and try to perform the duties of a Brahmin. One should act to satisfy the Supreme Lord. For example, Arjuna was a Kshatriya. He was hesitating to fight the other party. But if such fighting is performed for the sake of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there need be no fear of degradation. In the business field also, sometimes a merchant has to tell so many lies to make a profit. If he does not do so, there can be no profit. Sometimes a merchant says, "Oh, my dear customer, for you I am making no profit." But one should know that without profit, the merchant cannot exist. Therefore, it should be taken as a simple lie if a merchant says that he is not making a profit. But the merchant should not think that because he is engaged in an occupation in which the telling of lies is compulsory, he should give up his profession and pursue the profession of a Brahmin. That is not recommended. Whether one is a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Sudra doesn't matter. If he serves by his work the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even Brahmins who perform different types of sacrifice sometimes must kill animals because sometimes animals are sacrificed in such ceremonies. Similarly, if a Kshatriya engaged in his own occupation kills an enemy, there is no sin incurred. In the third chapter, these matters have been clearly and elaborately explained. Every man should work for the purpose of yajna, or for Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anything done for personal sense gratification is a cause of bondage. The conclusion is that everyone should be engaged according to the particular mode of nature he has acquired, and he should decide to work only to serve the supreme cause of the Supreme Lord. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Budhle Shrimati Bhakti Viranta Swamini Tinamini Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharini Nirvisesa Sanyavadi Paschatya Desa Tarine. Sometimes, if we look back at the words here of the sloka, we have in the first line Swadharma. Now, a lot of times Swadharma is discouraged. We say that, your Swadharma, or there are different types of Dharma. There's Deha Dharma, and there's Dharma according to the society. Well, this Swadharma, in this case, means what our actual nature is. And that is decided according to what the modes of nature we perform in. Now, we have a lot of examples of two different types of performances. For instance, when Srila Prabhupada was instituting the Varnashram system, he called it Daivi Varnashram. Daivi means transcendental. It comes from the word deva. Deva, and then it's declined into daiva, and then Daivi, meaning of. of the divine or of the Lord. So Varnashram itself is not sufficient for satisfying the Supreme Lord. It's when the Varnashram duties are performed for the satisfaction of Krishna or Yajna or Vishnu that we can become perfect in our activities. So searching for examples, there's one quite controversial example that's described in reference to this era of Mahabharata and this battle time. There was one character named Ekalavya. Now, a lot of times in modern day politics, Ekalavya is described as an outcast, and the egocentric guru who was a Brahmin refused to teach Ekalavya. But if you study the real history of why Dronacharya refused to teach the Kshatriya arts to Ekalavya, then you understand that Dronacharya was acting exactly according to Dharma. Because Ekalavya, see, you have to remember that when Lord Brahma and the demigods went to the ocean of milk, and Lord Vishnu was there on Svetadvip, and they asked Vishnu to come down because Bhumi was suffering due to the overburden of sinful Kshatriyas. Lord Vishnu instructed the demigods to descend in the family of the Yadavas and to assist him in Paritranaya Sarunam Vinashaya Sudhuskritam, that he was going to protect his devotees and destroy the demons. So when the demigods appeared, demons also appeared in the other families. For instance, we know that Hiranyakashipu appeared as Shishupal, Kalanimi appeared as Kamsa, like that. So there was a big predestined war that was going to happen, as always happens between the demigods and the demons. Now, when this war took place, beforehand, all of the princes were being taught by Dronacharya, who was appointed by Bhishma Dev to teach both the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And even at that time, it was quite clear who was demoniac and who was godly. So there was a Nishada king, and his name was Hiranyadhanush. Nishada means, if you remember, when King Vena was killed by the Brahmins and they churned his thighs, a black man came out. The only reason why he was black was not for discrimination, that just happened to be his color. And he was the sinful reactions personified of Maharaj Vena. And he went into the jungles, and his occupation was plundering, thieving, lying. And there's a whole class of people, even within the Varnashram, that's their occupation. In fact, they live right in front of us here, in front of the temple. It's a class of people. You can't change that. There are tribal people, aborigines, people living in the jungle, the boatsmen. That's how they survive. Just like Prabhupada's explaining here, the merchant. He can't survive unless he lies. And the kshatriya, part of his job is to kill. So that's why in a few verses afterwards, Krishna will explain that every activity is covered by fault. But the discriminating person has to understand where a person is situated according to their svadharma, according to their nature, and how they should be trained. So the Nishada race, which are plunderers who live in the jungles, they also have their kings and their princes, and Ekalavya happened to be a prince of this Nishada race, and his family was associated with Jarasandha. Jarasandha was always opposed to the Supreme Lord. He hated Krishna as much as Shishupal hated him, and Kamsa. That's why he married his daughters to Kamsa. So Dronacharya understood where Ekalavya was coming from in the social strata, and therefore he refused to teach him the secret arts of the Kshatriyas, because he understood that these arts would be misused by the demoniac forces. So he would not accept him as a disciple. Ekalavya, rather than being respectful to his guru and accepting that he was rejected, he instead went into the jungle, built a clay murti of his guru, and began to practice on his own. The jungle was just near where the Pandavas and Kauravas were studying. You know, we have Gurgaon here. So that's the Guru Gram, that's where Duryodhana lived, and that was where he taught the Kaurava princes. So Ekalavya was nearby in the jungle, and he was practicing and practicing to the point where he attained perfection in the Kshatriya arts. He would even practice at night. Now Arjuna also was doing the same practicing under the guidance of his guru. Dronacharya considered him to be the most gifted. And there's something called Shabdavedi. And that means, because Arjuna, he noticed that Bhima was so expert in eating that even in pitch black darkness, he could eat. He knew where his mouth was. So Arjuna, who was expert in archery, he decided that if Bhima could eat in the dark, Arjuna could shoot arrows in the dark just by hearing where something is. So he started to practice at nighttime even. So Ekalavya was equally so determined to become a great disciple, although he was rejected, that he also used to practice at night. So one day, Dronacharya sent out the princes for hunting, and they had a dog with them, because dogs are usually taken for hunting. They can find, they can sniff out where the animals are. And the princes went into the jungle, and they got lost. They weren't lost, but the dog got lost. And the dog found Ekalavya, and he started to bark at Ekalavya. Ekalavya was busy practicing, and without even looking at the dog, he shot 7 arrows to stop the dog from barking. He didn't hurt the dog. And then the dog ran to the princes, and when Arjuna saw the expertise of this archer, he realized that this archer was actually better than him. So he went to Dronacharya and asked, who is this person? And when they went to Ekalavya, he introduced himself as a disciple of Drona. So Dronacharya could immediately understand the mischief, and he went with Arjuna to that place. Now the reason why this story is brought up, even by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and by Prabhupada, of course, otherwise we wouldn't bother mentioning it, is because this is a lesson of what is called Guru Bhakti. Now as devotees, when we read this sloka in the Bhagavad Gita, the first question that comes to everyone's mind is, well, where do I fit in? Am I a Brahmin? We're all Sudras by nature, so we already know that we're Sudras. But possibly, is there any chance I could be a Kshatriya or a Brahmin, or maybe I have Vaishnav tendencies, I could make money for the temple? What's my Svadharma? So, the Svadharma of every single one of us here is that we are servants of our Guru. That is our Svadharma, because we have given up the mundane characteristics of classification. We can do anything for Krishna. We can clean the toilets. We can cook. We can dress the deity. We can manage. We can preach. It doesn't matter what our guru asks us to do. So long as he asks us to do it, then it is bhakti. So this is where Ekalavya went wrong. His guru had refused to teach him these arts. And out of his own egocentric desire, he still pursued to learn those arts. Now, we've had disciples like that in even present day. We've had our Ekalavyas. I remember there was one disciple. Of course, no names will ever be mentioned. There was one disciple who came here to Vrindavan, and he was expert at finding all the faults in our wonderful society. Expert. And in his opinion, all of the faults were the fault of Srila Prabhupada. Why is Prabhupada permitting such things to happen in this society? So he traveled to where Prabhupada was, and he asked Prabhupada, "This is going wrong, this is going wrong, I see this, this person's doing that. Do you know about what this person over here is doing?" And Prabhupada listened very carefully. And then Prabhupada said to him, "I feel I am not fit to be your guru. It's better you go somewhere else." So this is the humility. That when someone does not acknowledge the superiority of their guru and instead challenges the very instructions given by the guru, this is the opposite of guru bhakti. So this is the case, the real lesson for the Vaishnavas in the story of Ekalavya, because he did not follow the instruction of his guru, because his guru did not see him fit, and still he took to the practice and the mastering of the Kshatriya arts. So then what did the guru do? To protect the real Kshatriya clan, he asked for guru dakshin from his so-called disciple. Now, Ekalavya was in a fix then. If actually, as he said, he was a disciple of Drona, then he had to give dakshina. If he refused, then he wasn't a real disciple. So he was forced at that time to come under his guru's instruction. And Drona asked him for his right thumb. He had to give it. Otherwise, it was all a farce. So he cut off his thumb, and from that time onward, he became slower in his practice. Later, when he grew up, because his father and his whole tribe were connected to Jarasandha, he became the messenger between Jarasandha and Rukmini's father, Bhishmaka, who arranged the marriage to Shishupal. And when Krishna came and kidnapped, they eloped actually, they ran away together, Rukmini and Krishna. This infuriated him even more. So he actually hated Krishna. And when Pandraka came to attack Krishna and challenge Krishna, that he was, Pandraka said he was the real Vasudev and Krishna was the imitation, Ekalavya was right by his side. And when Krishna wasn't present at the time, so Balaram came out, when Ekalavya saw Balaram, he fled because he knew that he couldn't defeat Balaram. And finally, Krishna personally killed Ekalavya. So this is how we see that if our guru gives an instruction, whatever that may be, if he asks us to oversee construction, if he asks us to have many children, whatever that instruction might be. One devotee was just telling me last night, he got a phone call from his guru that you're just living in a comfort zone, staying in the temple. I want you to start traveling all over and preaching. Now that's very frightening for a brahmachari, because a brahmachari, He gets all of his clothing. He gets a place to stay. He gets 3 meals a day and cow's milk and you name it. He gets it. He gets soap and he gets toothpaste and he gets everything he needs. Just like a mother and a father providing. And if someone suddenly says to you, leave the temple and go preach, where's my toothpaste going to come from? But if the guru gives an instruction, we have to do it. If the guru says, go to China, when, because Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he had made a slight, those of you who were present at that time, 1976, he had slightly miscalculated the philosophy of Srila Prabhupada. And he was going around to the temples and stealing all the men and kicking all the women out of the temple. And that year, 1976, everyone went and complained to Prabhupada what was going on. So Prabhupada told him, all of your duties are taken away from you, and I want you to go to China to preach. China? No one had gone to China yet. And later that day, at that time, the devotees had entered into Hong Kong, which was free then. And the only sannyasi who had gone there was Trivikram Maharaj, a very brave sannyasi who could go anywhere alone. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj was sitting in his room and suddenly Trivikram Maharaj comes to the door. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, I'm not going. He knew that Prabhupada had sent Trivikram Maharaj to talk to him about China. But he had to go, because Prabhupada had ordered him. He said, you have no more responsibilities anywhere. You have to go to China to preach. And he did it, and he was successful. You see all the Chinese. In Vrindavan, we have waves of devotees. In the early 70s, it was all Commonwealth devotees because they were allowed to stay here without visas. So we had the British, the Australians, anyone who had a Commonwealth passport could stay here in Vrindavan. Then after Prabhupada disappeared, what came next? Maybe it was the Australians, they came, whoever the GBC was. So then after the Australians came the Italians, because we had someone preaching in Italy at the time. Then eventually came the Russians. We're at the Russian stage right now, right? So now what's happening is we have the Chinese waves coming in. Suddenly 50 Chinese devotees are here, 150 Chinese devotees. And one time we had the most wonderful experience at the opening of Vrindakund. Maybe 1,000 devotees came. And when it was time to leave, everyone got on the buses and left. And we had one car for the organizers. And we were getting into the car and suddenly we see two Chinese old ladies wandering around. They couldn't understand English, so they didn't know they had to get on the bus. So they were forgotten at Vrindakund. And they couldn't speak a word of English, and we couldn't speak a word of Hindi, Chinese. The only thing that they knew was Hare Krishna, and the only thing that we knew was Hare Krishna. So somehow or other we had to explain to them, get in the car and come with us to Vrindavan. And it was all done with Hare Krishna. So this is the wonderful universality of Prabhupada's society of Daivi Varnashram. You can't even speak to each other and still everything will go on very nicely by chanting Hare Krishna. So now about Ekalavya, he's dead now. But in his previous life he had been a demon. And we have another person who was rejected by Drona, and that was Karna. Now Karna, he's also a very controversial person in the whole Mahabharata. He's considered a tragic figure, because nothing really went right in his life. Abandoned by his mother, rejected, Even when he tried to marry the woman that he wanted, which was Draupadi, rejected by her, when he proved himself a better archer than Arjuna, he wasn't allowed to take part in the contest because he wasn't really a Kshatriya, because his adopted father was Sudra. When he tried to learn Kshatriya arts from Parshuram, he lied to Parshuram. He told Parshuram that he was a Brahmin. Now Parshuram, we'll tell that history next, but Parshuram would not train any Kshatriyas. Parshuram killed all the Kshatriyas on the whole planet 21 times because the Kshatriyas had become degraded. So he would only train Brahmins in the martial arts. Karna so much wanted to learn from him that he lied to him and told him he was from the Bhrigu dynasty. And he was learning very nicely, but he was out wandering one day and he saw a cow and he shot an arrow and killed that cow. So the owner of the cow, who was a Brahmin, cursed him that your chariot will get stuck in the mud and all the learning that you have acquired will do you no good. And he would not retract that because Karna had killed his cow. And then one day, Parshuram, who was very old even by that time, although he's still alive, he was walking around his ashram, checking everything, and he rested his head on Karna's leg, and a beetle came and started to bore into Karna's leg. And because Karna was by nature Kshatriya, he allowed the beetle to bore into his leg. And when Parshuram woke up and saw the blood, he could understand that this is a Kshatriya. So he cursed him also, that I have taught you the Brahmastra weapon, but when you need it, you'll forget how to use it. So this goes back all the way to when Krishna and Arjuna appeared as Nara and Narayan. Because there was a great demon, and his name was Sahasra Kavacha. He got bent by performing so many tapasyas. He had 1,000 kavachas, and no one could remove these kavachas from him. He was, no one could defeat this demon. So Nara Narayan took birth, they appeared, and the only way that this demon could be defeated was if someone simultaneously performed tapasya and fought with Sahasra Kavacha at the same time. So because Nara and Narayan were two, one would be performing tapasya while the other one would be fighting. And they would switch off every 1,000 years. And they got rid of 999 kavachas. And then this demon took birth as Karna with one more kavacha left. So in that lifetime, as Krishna and Arjuna, they were able to kill Karna. So this was all a carryover from his demoniac previous lifetime and all of the ill-fated things that happened to him. Because even when Krishna asked him to please give up your allegiance to this demoniac Duryodhana, Karna refused to do it because he owed his allegiance, because Duryodhana had always protected him and made him a prince of Anga. So we have the two different types of Kshatriyas. We even have two different types of Brahmins. Though, like we have Sukracharya, who we learned from Vamanadeva's appearance, he discouraged Bali Maharaj. He said, don't surrender to Vishnu. Otherwise, who's going to pay for all of the dakshina that I need? Right? So we have the devotee Brahmins, we have the Brahmins who are aligned with the demons, we have Kshatriyas like that. Now, how does one get their nature? A lot of times it's said that one's nature is created 20% by genetics and 80% by environment. That's the sociological outlook. That we might be born in a Brahmin family, we might be born in a Chandala family, a dog-eater family. But by association, we can either degrade ourselves or elevate ourselves. Now, in the case of Parshuram, there was a king named Gaudi, and he had a beautiful wife, a daughter named Satyavati. And one Brahmin wanted to marry her. His name was Richik. Naturally, the Brahmins are not so attractive to the Kshatriya women because from performing austerities, just like when Vyasadev had to give children to the wives of his dead stepbrother, Vichitravirya, one of them closed her eyes because his long hair from the matted locks, and they don't care for themselves. Their skin from performing tapasya becomes dry and dark from sitting in the sun and by the fires. So usually Brahmins are not very attractive for Kshatriya princesses. So Gaudi Maharaj, he wasn't so enthusiastic that his beautiful daughter marry this austere sage. So he made an impossible request. He said, I want 1,000 horses that are white, and the right ear is black, and impossible. But because the Brahmins are gifted from all of their sacrifices with understanding mantras and doing mystical things, he knew how to get these 1,000 horses from Varuna, and here he drives in with the 1,000 horses, and then he got the beautiful princess Satyavati. So Satyavati and her mother, they both, because they could see the power of this sage, they both requested him for children, for sons. And he prepared 2 oblations, one for his wife and one for his mother-in-law. And then he went out to take a bath. Now the mother-in-law was thinking, naturally, the husband is going to give a better thing to his own wife than to the mother-in-law. So he asked her daughter to switch the oblations so the mother could get the better one. So the daughter had to listen to her mother. She gave her mother the oblation meant for her. The mother took it. The daughter took the mother's. And then Richik Maharaj came back. And he could understand what happened. He said, oh, you've performed a great offense. Actually, he was very angry. He said, because for your mother, I prepared a son that will be very fierce, the way Kshatriyas should be. And for you, I prepared an oblation for a gentle and highly elevated Brahmin. So now you're going to give birth to a fierce Kshatriya, and your mother is going to give birth to a gentle Brahmin. And this is not the way it should be in the Vedic culture. So Satyavati, she knew how to placate her husband. And finally he cooled down. He said, well, I can't change it, but your grandson then will become a fierce Kshatriya. So she gave birth to Jamadagni. And Jamadagni had so many sons, and the youngest son was Parshuram. And her mother gave birth to Vishvamitra. So we have heard the story and seen the movies of Vishvamitra, that he was a Kshatriya who by his austerities attained the Brahminical platform. Well, not only by his austerities, but because of this oblation, he was Brahminical by nature. So sometimes we get born in a family that's completely demoniac, but somehow or other we might become devotees or try to become devotees. Or we have a family that's completely devotional. For instance, Srila Prabhupada, his children, One of them, as soon as he left the planet, made a 17-year court case against ISKCON, claiming that ISKCON was a family business and that all of the ISKCON temples belonged to the sons. So here we have Srila Prabhupada, a pure devotee, and his son working against everything that Prabhupada accomplished in devotional service. So it's not always by birth, and we shouldn't see our birth as a discriminating feature for continuing and progressing in devotional life. So Parshuram, although he was the son of a perfect Brahmin, Jamadagni, he had a fierce temper. And when Kartavirya Arjuna, who was a very proud and overly confident king, he had 1,000 arms, when he came to visit Jamadagni's ashram one day, and he saw that Jamadagni was able to feed the entire camp with thousands of soldiers and ministers because he had a Kamadenu, Nandini, Kartavirya Arjuna decided, I'm the emperor, I should have this Kamadenu. So he sent his soldiers and they kidnapped Nandini and brought her back to Mahishmati, his capital. And when they stole Nandini, and Nandini was suffering and crying, when Parshuram came back, to the ashram, and he heard what happened, he went and killed the father. And then he reported it to his father. And his father says, you have committed a sin. This king is an emperor. And if you kill a king, that is a great sin, because then all of the plunderers will become strong. So you have to perform tapasya by going to all the holy places. And he did that. But Jamadagni himself, one day his mother, his wife, had gone to draw water from the river. And she saw the Gandharvas enjoying, and she became attracted to the king of the Gandharvas. And she stayed too long watching them enjoying. So when she came back, the sage Jamadagni could understand her mind. And he told Parshuram, he told the elder brothers, I want you to kill your mother. And they all refused. So then he told Parshuram, I want you to kill your mother and all of your brothers. And Parshuram immediately killed them all, because he knew that either he listened to his father, and then afterwards his father will be pleased with him and he can ask for a boon, or he'll also be killed by his father. So when he killed his mother and his brothers, his father was pleased. He said, I'll give you a boon. He said, bring them back to life and make it that they can't remember that I killed them. So Jamadagni was also very strong-natured. So when the father was killed, when the emperor was killed, the sons came and cut off Jamadagni's head. So that was when Parshuram began his tirade of killing all of the unqualified Kshatriyas on the planet. And those who escaped, they went to Europe and they went to Africa, and it's predicted, for instance, it's predicted that the Abhiras will overcome India. So the Abhiras are the Afghanis and the people in that area. So Prabhupada explains that when Muhammad Ghori, 1,000 years ago, conquered India, that was this prediction made. So Parshuram, he wanted to cleanse the whole world. The same reason that Krishna appeared, Parshuram appeared as Shaktavashavatar. He protected the devotees and he killed the demons. And in this case, it was the demoniac rulers. And then when all of the demons were killed, who were Kshatriyas, there were no more Kshatriyas, so who was going to carry on the race of Kshatriyas? Does anyone know? Well, very interesting story. Sometime back, we were studying in Srimad Bhagavatam class, in the Hindi class, about Brihaspati. And Brihaspati one day, unfortunately, became attracted to his own brother's wife. And he came to impregnate her. Her name was Mamata. And she appealed to him that, "I'm already pregnant. Please, don't do this. And not only am I pregnant, but this child in my womb has already been trained in all the Vedas while he's been in the womb. So please don't disturb this embryo." And even the embryo appealed to Brihaspati. "Please, there's only room for one of us in here." So Brihaspati, due to his passion at that moment, he became so angry that he cursed that embryo, that because you're trying to stop me, you will be blind when you're born. Your name will be Dirga Tamasa. And he impregnated Mamata, and two children were born. One was the great sage Bharadvaj, and the other was Dirga Tamasa, who was a great Brahmin, but blind. So Dirga Tamasa, he got a nice wife, and he gave birth to Gotam Rishi and other sages. But when he got older, his wife and his sons turned on him and said, "You're so useless. We have actually been supporting you your whole life because you're blind. Now you're an old man. Why should we keep feeding you?" So they tied him onto a raft and they put him on a river, thinking that he would just float down the river and die. This was at the same time when Parshuram had killed all of the Kshatriyas. So all of the Kshatriyanis, the queens, had no way to carry on the race. So one grandfather of these queens, he saw the raft coming down the river, and he brought the sage, and there's a system, and we also know this system from Vyasadeva. It's called Niyoga. That means that a Brahmin or an elder brother, someone can impregnate the wife with children if the husband is unable to do so. So Dirga Tamasa, he was requested to give all of these Kshatriya women Brahmin sons, because then Parshuram wouldn't kill them. So these children who were then born were accepted by Parshuram, and they carried on the race. And that's why, at this time, when all the Kshatriyas were killed, Parshuram laid down his paras, right? And he went up and started his meditation. And in the next yuga, he will be a great Brahmin preacher. So this back and forth between birth and between qualification, we have to each understand what our nature is. Our nature is disciple of the guru, and whatever the guru asks us to do. Because even if we're born in a Kshatriya family, we might have Brahmin tendencies. Even if we're born in a Brahmin family, we might have Kshatriya tendencies. Birth is a second consideration. That's why Krishna says, Chatur Varna Maya Shristam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. It's broken up by our guna and our karma. So Krishna, in this verse, he says that you should perform your svadharma. Now we all know what our svadharma is. That's to follow the instructions of our guru, because we're out of the varnashram system now. Having given up our previous birth, now we have our second birth as disciples. And it says, svabhava niyatam karma kurvan nap noti kilbisham. So kilbisham means sinful reactions. It can also be translated as diseases, as offenses. So a lot of times the devotees, they worry that, well, if I give up my family responsibilities, won't I get sinful reactions then? Well, there's some responsibilities we can give up and some we can't give up. For instance, when the six Goswamis, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami had no children. Of the three brothers, there was only one son, and that was Jiva Goswami from Anupam. But they very carefully gave up their family responsibilities by dividing their wealth properly. They gave, who can tell me how they divided their wealth? 50% for the Vaishnavas. 25% for the family. And 25% emergencies. So this is the correct way to give up family responsibilities. The first Bhagavad Gita class I ever attended, the devotee who was speaking, he told us about this 50%, 25%, and 25%. I desperately wanted to become a devotee. So after the class, I raised my hand and I said, well, I have $200 in the bank. I would like to give 50% to the temple. So the next day, he took me to the bank. And I took out my $100 and I gave it to the temple. And then I had no family and I had no emergencies. So the next week I went and took out the other $100 and gave that to the temple too. So, and then the devotee wrote to Prabhupada, he was the temple president. And he said that I had joined the temple and now we have $200, which was a lot of money in those days. And we want to use this $200 to buy Radha Krishna deities for the temple. So I didn't know that till years later, that $200 was going to buy Radha Krishna deities. So you're never a loser. If you give 50%, that's wonderful. If you give 100%, that's more wonderful. So we know our duty. We don't have to worry about sinful reactions or disease or offenses committed because we're following in the footsteps of all the great acharyas and the devotees of the past, taking the example of six Goswamis so that we can follow them back to Godhead and meet with Radha and Krishna, either in deity form or in the spiritual world. Any questions? So everyone's going to go to the bank tomorrow and...
This is from 2.12, where Lord says that there was no time when you were not there, I was not there, and all these people were not there. So Srila Prabhupada makes a point that material individuality, as explained by Mayavadis, is not being stressed by Krishna. What does this statement mean?
Let's go to the sentence because it's not something that we read today. 2.12?
2.12.
Okay, where's the sentence?
This is the second paragraph. The Mayavadi theory, and then it is that second line, nor is the theory that we only think of individuality in the conditioned state supported herein. What does this mean, that individuality only in the conditioned state?
In the Mayavad philosophy, and also, you've heard of Nirvana, and you've heard of Brahman. Well, according to Mayavad philosophy and Brahmavadi philosophy, we are all one in nature. And when we become covered with illusion, we believe that we are individual. But when we attain perfection, we merge back into the oneness. And so long as we see individuality we are conditioned. And when we see everyone as one, then we are enlightened. So, two times I heard very strong defeating of this. One is because someone raised this question, because in the West nobody really knows what Mayavad means. They have no sense of anything other than sense gratification. But in India, some people understand. So Gurudas was giving a lecture, and someone said, "We're all one. There's all oneness and perfection." And Gurudas challenged him, "Well, if we're all one, then I'll sleep with your wife." And the man got very offended. But Gurudas was trying to make a point that we're not all one. Because if we were all one, then why wouldn't you object? Naturally the man got upset, and the whole audience got upset, and Prabhupada explained afterwards that you could have used some other example. But then I was at another lecture at the Delhi. In Delhi, we went to a home lecture, and Tejas at that time was lecturing. And the lady who was the hostess, she began to say that we're all one, and actually, when we attain perfection, we realize that we are all God. So Tejas, he started to speak about the incarnation of Rishabhdev. He said, Rishabhdev, because everyone's heard, the Jains all know about Rishabhdev. He said, Rishabhdev was such a great transcendentalist, and he was so pure that when he passed stool, his stool smelled like roses. So he said to the woman, "When your stool smells like roses, then I will accept you as God." So these are non-philosophical ways to defeat the impersonalist, but these are memorable ways, because if you just start talking philosophy, then the people will just argue, correct? But when you talk about things that they understand, then they'll get offended, but they'll stop talking. So this individuality, it goes on even after perfection and even after going back to the spiritual world. At no time do I become you or do you become Dharmatma. No, always we are individuals. Just like when a bird flies into a green tree. Right?
One more question, and the last line of this purport. If individuality refers to the empirical universe and there is no need of teaching by the Lord, what does this mean?
Oh. The same purport?
The second last line. Last. Before the
If individuality refers to the empirical universe, then there is no need of teaching by the Lord. The plurality of the individual soul and of the Lord is an eternal fact, and it is confirmed by the Vedas as above mentioned. The empirical universe. The demons love to embrace impersonal philosophy, because then whatever they're doing doesn't matter, because there's no sinful reaction, because when they've attained perfection, they lose their individuality. So whatever they do now doesn't matter, right? So the teachings of the Lord and all of the rules and regulations given by the Lord are of no interest to the Mayavadi, because it doesn't matter what he does, because he's already attained his godhood, right? So he can do anything. So Prabhupada is explaining here that for the impersonalists, all of these teachings have no value. Because according to them, they're going to lose their individuality anyway. Right? Just like when there's a... One man was beating a dog. And someone tried to stop me. He said, I'm not beating the dog. The stick was beating the dog. It was the stick. Right? So they don't accept responsibility for their own actions. Right? But then if they do something great, then they'll want to accept responsibility. So all of these laws and teachings given by Krishna are of no interest to them. And that's why they take the Bhagavad Gita and give their own interpretation. Because they have to twist the teachings around to prove that whatever they do is fine. So Prabhupada explains that there are even sannyasis who break all of the four regulative principles. I mean, that was right in class this morning, that nowadays the sannyasis, because since the time of Indra, there are bogus sannyasis. So these sannyasis, they have no interest in following the rules and regulations of the Supreme Lord. And they'll break all the principles because they're already Narayan, so it doesn't matter. Does that clarify anything?
I didn't understand the meaning of this sentence. If individuality refers to the empirical universe, what does...
Well, we can look up in the dictionary what empirical means. We have to look up the word empirical. I don't know if it's in the glossary or not. See, I don't have such questions because I'm not smart enough to ask these questions, but you're intelligent, so you're asking. So I don't even know what the word empirical means. Do you know what it means? Yeah? Look up the word. Yes, right. Derived from
experiment and observation rather than theory.
Rather than theory. If individuality refers to that which is derived from experimentation and observation, is it?
Yes.
Yes. That means if individuality refers to what we can see and experiment, then there is no need of the teaching by the Lord. Right, because we're only going to accept as much as we can see with our own eyes and experiment. If I tell you to chant Hare Krishna, then are you going to do it? If you're an empiricist? If I tell you there's a spiritual world where everybody is eternally youthful and happy all the time, are you going to believe it? If you're an empiricist? No, because you can't see it yourself. So there's no need for all these teachings for the empiricist. And that's why the scientists are called the greatest... I won't call them demons, but... the greatest empiricists. Because they won't... Although they accept so much that they haven't seen... Light years and Big Bang theories and atoms. They can't see protons and neutrons, none of those things. Now they're saying there's something faster than the speed of light. You know, it's all guesswork. But because they created those theories, they'll gladly accept it. But they won't accept anything from the Vedas. Okay? Any more questions? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you. Yeah, and Akshay Gauranga will also come.
Running up experienced before, right? And whole day I was like, when I woke up, I was just, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And that time I was like, if I will not become, if I just disappear, it's even, it's, I just, it was so much fear.
Yes.
Only
exactly.
Existence was fear.
Right.
So when I, then later, when I wrote my books, I made this line that, that the personalist, they think about, like, to become one with the one, and this is actually spiritual suicide.
Yes, that's
this,
right.
That's what I experienced. I didn't
exactly.
want to become healed as
that's
I
right.
am.
As a person.
Because yeah. this is the only that I, that this is the only thing that really exists, this small me and something around me.
That's
but
why the impersonalists come down from the meditation and do hospital
was,
activities.
I mean, it was really,
yeah.
I could see, we always see sometimes terrible things, but it was the
most scariest thing.
Yes. It was the most scariest thing yes. in all my life.
Exactly.
I just have a question, a very personal. I have a daughter, she's going to be 14.
Yeah,
she's
going
to be how old?
14.
14.
Very hard time. She
yes.
wants everything that I don't like.
Yeah.
But what would you suggest to me?
What country do you live in?
Argentina. I'm from Argentina. I live in Australia.
Oh,
you live
in Australia.
That's right. You mentioned Australia. You mentioned Australia.
Right. Are you both Argentinians?
Yes.
Why are you living in Australia?
Economics.
Economics. You're making money there.
Yeah.
And she went to Australian school system?
Mm-hmm. She was born there.
She
yeah.
was born there, yeah. Yeah, that's what
yeah,
happens.
We have two daughters.
Yeah,
one Lakshmi, which she's already left from,
yeah.
And then the youngest one, which is still in the world.
And what city do you live in?
Melbourne.
In Melbourne?
In Melbourne.
So you're part of the temple there?
Yes.
Nice. And your daughter has any attraction towards the activities there?
She was younger, perhaps.
Yeah.
But not anymore.
Yeah, right.
In Anshuman Bhagavatam, I was reading, I'm not very good with verses. But I remember it. Yeah. It's in Canto 5.
Yeah.
And it talks, this part there says one cannot deliver the keys.
Oh,
but
no, you can't.
Should not be a father.
No, that's, you see, we try our best, right? We all go through that. I have a daughter also. I know what it's like.
How old is she?
Well, now she's 27.
Okay.
So she was born here and grew up here, but she doesn't want to live here. She's, although she got initiated when she was 14, now very little practice because she's gone to America to live. We can't. Prabhupada told me, force does not work.
Force
does not work. You cannot force. Right. All you can do is set an example for the child, and that child will remember that example. If you're happy in what you're doing, if you have purpose in your life, because you know that there's nothing in the material world except for the four sinful activities, right? And eventually, she'll come to that realization. And she'll remember you by her own experience, yes.
It's just heartbreaking when you see. It's just heartbreaking.
Yes, it's so heartbreaking.
You sort of can't detach from the feelings of being a mother, brother, or father.
But you can't.
But yes.
You can't force them to be Krishna conscious. They have to come to this realization on their own.
Yes.
And that's why the best thing to do is, and I go through with my daughter 100%. I totally understand. You just let them know that you love her, you're always there for her, you want to help her in any way possible, and she's always welcome to come back to the lifestyle that you have. So never threaten her, never punish her. I never once punished my daughter in her whole life, never once hit her. I never once forced her to chant around. Nothing. everything has to come from the individual. You just let her know we love you.
Mataji, and you never felt used?
Used by my daughter?
Like abused?
That's the only thing children see their parents for. Yeah. And that's in every species of life, the birds.
True.
She's 27 years old and I still send her money. And I'm 60 years old and I have no source of income.
That
doesn't matter. That's, a child will always see their parents like that.
But we were a child too. We still are.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, I don't think I ever crossed my mind.
Do you help her?
Yes.
Now you do.
Oh, even when I was a child.
When you were 14 years old, did you help her?
I always used to ask, can I get the meal from the fridge? I always asked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
nice
always,
child.
Always asked. Nice. Well, I don't know about nice, but it was like your property I respect.
Wow, you're special.
Yeah, in so many ways. But,
from that age.
That was an interesting question.
Yeah, from that age, you just have to be her friend. And you have to
change
age of 14, 15.
You have to be her friend.
You're her friend. You're no longer her superior. You're her friend. Right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kept that way because she, for example, when she's going out, I don't know if you understand the term, going out.
Yeah, of course. I grew up in
America. Oh. with a boy that when she's 14, he's 16.
Yeah.
But I spoke to her about sex. At the same time, she, I feel that she's attracted to him, not sexually, but just to be with him, you know, I feel good to be with him, you know, just feel happy with him.
Yeah,
okay. So you can see him twice a week, a few hours, short, you know, every day.
Mm-hmm.
Open.
To help, you know, what to do is, you become her friend so much that she trusts you and she can tell you everything. And then, when the whole sex thing starts, when the drug thing starts, she can come to you and say, this, this, and this. And you're not it's not a shock to you. It's like, well, yeah, I went through that too. Because we've all been through it, you know. Become her friend. And let her know, you can talk to her, you can advise her, you can explain to her that if you do this, then this will happen, you know, if you have illicit sex with him, then you might get some disease, you know, you just explain it logically to her, and explain to her that if he's had sex, then every single person, he's had sex with every single person they've had sex with, and now there's AIDS, and it means that you might not be able to have children when you grow up because you might get some disease, you know. Just don't say you're not allowed. Just explain it to her in a rational way, what happens when you take drugs. What happens when you take drugs is sometimes your mind becomes cracked. Get her books on these things so she understands it.
At the moment she understands that, like she says, I don't know what books, how did that stick that gives you cancer? You know,
yeah.
So she's
a bright kid, but lazy, in the lazy side of things.
That's it.
Just
kind of
sort of returning this into a parental, is that okay?
Sorry.
Here we are. I've been all this.
No, because I was a single parent, no less, so it was more difficult. Mm-hmm.
And in this part, parent teacher interview. There was a smart kid, but very nice. And she's vegetarian from the heart.
Uh-huh.
So
good.
That's very good.